As we go about trying to teach the lost and talk to people as we have opportunity, and even some that we may be able to engage in some studies with, we become discouraged whenever their final answer to the offer of salvation is no, they're not interested. And so we get kind of discouraged and down about that. And it reflects, I think, something would be normal, trying to interest anybody in anything else. And when you can't get them as excited about it as you are, you kind of feel down about it. But in this situation, we don't need to. And this lesson is designed to help us to get to realize that. Because we live in a world that is just carnally minded. Don't have to tell anybody that. That's nothing new. It's actually always been that way. There's always been more people interested in the ways of the world than in the ways of God. So you can start out with that premise. And yet, it still never ceases to amaze us how crafty Satan is about that and the influence that he has to get people to think actually that what is actually bad is, no, that's good. And they call evil good and good evil. And so we're still caught up in that mindset, many people are around us. The devil is certainly knows what he's doing, and he turns things that are spiritual into those things that are carnal. He will get people who seem to, on the surface, be spiritually minded people, but he will convince them that there are things that it's okay for you to do that, and you can still consider yourself to be a spiritual person. I remember several years ago, Oprah Winfrey came out and said that she really didn't necessarily believe in God, but she was spiritual. All right, I don't know how you do that, but she thought that she could, and that's because Satan, he's pretty adept at getting people to believe a whole lot of things that doesn't make a lot of sense. And the church is also affected by that. Corinth was definitely affected by worldliness trying to find its way in. They were hopelessly, it seemed like, divided among themselves, one group following this fellow, another group following this man over here. And so Paul was trying to get them to realize you all need to be on the same page. You need to all be speaking the same thing and be united in your effort instead of being divided as they were. Verse 10, I exhort you, brethren, by the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that you all agree and there be no divisions among you, but you be made complete in the same mind and in the same judgment. And they weren't at that time. Another thing to keep in mind here, that preachers and teachers of the Word of God are merely servants. That was another part of their problem. They were exalting the individual who may have been instrumental in their conversion, and they had really forgotten what the important point was. But it's expressed in chapter 3 and verse 6, which is really the subject of this lesson. I planted, Apollos watered, but God was causing the growth, or it was God that was giving the increase. It was not the preacher, per se, who had been instrumental in their conversion. And so he tells them in chapter 4 and verse 6, he said, these things I've planned to myself and Apollos for your sake, that in us you might learn not to exceed, become arrogant on one another, not to exceed what is written, in order that no one of you might become arrogant one against the other. So they were putting too much confidence in men. Good men, yes. And these men, as far as we know, didn't set out to get a following. But that's what happened. It was the people's fault for following them. They weren't trying to do that. Now, the first danger we have here then, when we get down and discouraged about the lack of what we hope would be a good outcome, is that we're thinking too highly of our own ability. We blame ourselves when things are not going like they should. We think, well, what am I doing wrong? I must be doing something wrong. Maybe I need a new technique. No, that's not it. It's not our ability that's the problem. It's the choice that the people are making that we're trying to reach. And Jesus had to deal with that. He talked about some of them in John, the third chapter. And he said, they do not want to come to the light. The gospel is a powerful light, and it shines on people's hearts, and it reveals whatever is in their heart. And there are some who don't want that kind of examination. This is the judgment. Light has come into the world. And men love the darkness rather than the light. Why? For their deeds were evil. For everyone who does evil hates the light, does not come to the light, lest his deeds should be exposed. That's their problem. It's not our problem, it's their problem. But he who practices the truth comes to the light, that his deeds may be manifested as having been wrought in God. So when we get discouraged about the lack of, again, the outcome we would like, understand, it's not our fault so long as we're giving them the truth. The lack of growth is there because of their refusal to come to the light. Or maybe they are deceived, as Paul talked to the Thessalonians, that there's a strong delusion that comes along. And for some reason, it seems unknown to us. People will believe preposterous things. I mean, we come up in class this morning. That was a good example. 144,000. That's the number of the elect, according to the Jehovah's Witnesses, that will be allowed into heaven. All the others who choose to obey God, they're going to be down here on the earth yet. That's going to be renovated. They're going to remodel it, put in all the latest bells and whistles. But sorry, folks, outside of that 144,000, nobody else goes to heaven. I find that almost laughable, especially when you look at the description in the book of Revelation where that number is found. Because if that number is to be taken literally, and they do take it literally, you find out upon examination of the verses that has that number in it, that they're all male, they're Jewish, and they're virgins. So that leaves out all of us Gentiles, and leaves all of us out that are married. How can people believe stuff like that? They do. They are deceived. And so don't beat yourself up for the fact that you're not able to really reach them with the gospel. It's not your fault. They've been deceived. I wonder how other people felt and faced this. Well, Elijah, he went and hid in the cave. He got so discouraged about not being able to reach the people of God, he went off and hid in a cave, 1 Kings chapter 19. You remember that story? We're not going to go back and go over all that. That's how discouraged he got. And God had to remind him of several things. One of them was, he said, Elijah, I got some work for you to do. You're going to have to get out of that cave. And he said, I've got 7,000 that have not bowed the knee to Baal yet. Elijah, you're not alone. You're not unique in this. Jeremiah, the poor prophet Jeremiah, very, very unpopular man with many of the people. Well, what was the matter with him? Did he just deliberately rub people a wrong way? Doesn't he know how to deal with people? No, his problem was that he was telling them the truth. They didn't want to hear the truth. They would rather hear what the false prophet had to say. And so in chapter 38, they disliked what he was saying so much that they threw him down in a hole into the cistern of Malchijah, the king's son, in the court of the guardhouse, let Jeremiah down with ropes. There was no water in there, and Jeremiah sank down into the mud. That's what they thought of him. Was that Jeremiah's fault? If he just maybe talked a different way? No, the people didn't want to hear it. So we have to continue to work, even when we get discouraged. The parable of the sower. That seed can only find a good and honest heart if it's sown. It can't do it if it's not sown. We'll have some successes. Paul talked about Timothy being his child in the faith. John in 3 John, verse 4, he says, I have no greater joy than this, than to hear of my children walking in the truth. I think those children were same kind of children referenced by Paul with respect to Timothy, child in the faith, children by the faith. It's always been this way. The faithful have always been, for the most part, neglected, maybe even persecuted. Remember Noah, 8 souls saved by water. The rest of the people didn't want to hear it. Was that Noah's fault? No, that was not Noah's fault. And we shouldn't blame ourselves for it. It's not the lack of our ability. It's their response to the gospel. They don't want it. And so it's about our being willing to persevere. Paul couldn't convert Felix. He couldn't convert Agrippa, so far as we know. Well, was it Paul's fault? No, it wasn't his fault. Maybe Paul didn't know what he was talking about. Yes, he did. Maybe Paul didn't know how to present it. Yes, he did. Maybe with respect to Felix, if he hadn't talked about the things he did, righteousness, temperance, and judgment to come, maybe he should have preached on love. Paul, if you'd have just had a sermon on grace. No. He told Felix what he needed to hear, and Felix says he trembled. He didn't do anything about it, as far as we know, though. Now, another thing here, another danger here, when we don't get our thinking right on this, is that we use a lack of result as an excuse for doing nothing at all. And that's where we forget God is the one that gives the increase. Who does the watering and who does the planting? That's our job. Nobody, really, in a sense, can be a failure at doing that. Now, we may have varying degrees of being able to plant and water, but we can all do something, and so we can all count ourselves as a success. Well, wait a minute. They don't pay attention to what I'm trying to plant in their heart. That's not your fault. Just do the planting, do the watering. God will give the increase. But he can't give an increase if the watering and the planting is not done. You see that? I think we all see that. Sometimes we wait for people to move in. And it's great to have people moving in an area and decide that they want to assemble with us regularly and be a part of the congregation. It was great when Nick and Barbie moved back and they came back here. We missed them. It was great to have them come back. But my point is, we can't depend upon that as the way of increasing our efforts here. It's great when that happens. And sometimes I've seen places where churches almost lobby to get a particular family. Well, we want you to come over here. No, you need to come over here. We'll offer you this. We'll offer that. We don't need to be doing that stuff. But it's good to have that happen. But we're not just trying to reconfigure the borders of the kingdom, so to speak. We're trying to expand them. That's just reconfiguring when they move from one place to another. Complacency will doom us. That's the path that the church at Sardis was taking, Revelation chapter 3. In verses 1 and 2. That, you see, that was their problem. The angel of Sardis, the one who has the 7 spirits and the 7 stars, says this, I know your works. You have a name that you are alive, but you're dead. Wake up and strengthen the things that remain, which were about to die, for I have not found your deeds completed in the sight of God. Something went wrong at Sardis. They were alive at one time, a live, thriving church. Now they were dead. They needed to repent, get back on the right track. As long as the seed is being sown, the church is alive. Whether we do not see any numerical increase, that's not the question. Is the seed being sown? And when the seed is no longer being sown, then the church is dead. That church of Sardis, verse 2. If we're not sowing the seed, we're dead. Dead in the water. Not going to accomplish anything. Not going to have any growth if we don't sow the seed. So we don't want to use a lack of results as an excuse to just get so discouraged that we just give up. That very next person just might be the one that has been looking for the truth. And I don't believe that it accidentally happens that we come into contact with people like that. I think God's providence is at work. And if there's somebody that wants to know the truth, God will make sure they get the opportunity to hear it. And he'll try to use you and try to use me to get the job done. And thirdly, the other danger here is narrowing the responsibility of this planting and watering down to just a few. This again really amounts to trusting in men and also being complacent about individual responsibility. The burden was never meant to be placed on just the preacher and the elders and maybe the deacons. That's not going to be a very efficient way to go at it. That would make the rest of the members of the congregation just spectators, just watching the efforts that others are making. But God didn't intend for anybody to be a spectator. He intended that we all be involved in one way or another, depending upon our several different abilities. Think about 100 people in a congregation with a preacher and 3 elders, just as an example. What do you got? If we look at it the way some people do, we've got 4 workers and 96 spectators. Now, how's that going to work out? You got 100 people, but the way it is viewed by some people, well, we just leave all that up to the preacher and the elder. You know, they take care of all that. We don't have to worry about that. Well, that's not very efficient, is it? 96 people get to sit on the sidelines and just watch what's going on. But Jesus said over here in Matthew chapter 9, 37 and 38, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Therefore, beseech the Lord of the harvest to send out workers into his harvest. We need more workers, not fewer workers. Shouldn't have 96 spectators. We should have 100 people working along with them, not spectators. Only people that should be watching what a church might be doing are people that happen to visit. But the members, we've got to all be doing what we can. In whatever way we can, utilizing whatever talent we have. And finally, if we leave it up to other people, then the sphere of influence that we have as an individual is not going to be dealt with. Those people are going to be neglected. We all have a sphere of influence. We've got some neighbors. We've got people at work. If we were in school, we still have people at school. And that's a unique situation for us. Nobody else really has the same sphere of influence that I would have. And I don't have the same amount of influence you have in terms of the people that I associate with. So we all have to work that circle of influence. And if we wait for somebody else to, they're not probably going to come over into that circle because that's not the people they know. That's the people I know or that's the people you know. But to wait for someone else to come in there and have some influence over them is not a very good idea, not very efficient. Simply put, God has no voice where we do not speak. He's depending upon us. Now the devil, he employs all kinds of tactics. He's got false teachers out there. He seduces people with the idea that your life will be better if you do this, that, or the other. Society in general is out there all against us, and he's getting his message out very effectively. We've got to counteract that message with the gospel. God gives the increase. Don't get discouraged. Keep on planting. Keep on watering. God gives the influence. We've seen it right here within the last several months or year or so. God gives the increase. Got Gary and Ashley sitting back there. Yeah. Harry was here earlier. See, that's working a sphere of influence, a unique sphere of influence for you and for me. Well, a church that is working but not growing can survive. A church that's growing but not working won't last forever, because that growth will slow down, won't it? A church that's doing neither must revive itself. So I hope that we are, and I believe that we are, in the category of a church that is working and will survive. If we quit working, we won't. If you're here this morning, you have this one more opportunity. Become a child of God. That's the best decision you could ever make in your life. And join with a group of people who love God and love Jesus, who want to serve and want you to serve along with us. Let us know if we can help you as we stand and sing once again for your encouragement.